A lot of people have to work outside in the heat. Oregon OSHA, the agency charged with protecting workers, recently put some emergency rules in place to protect workers from our record-breaking and long-lasting heat waves. The new rules order employers to provide shade and water to workers when the heat index climbs above 80 degrees. Joining us this morning is Michael Wood, the administrator for Oregon OSHA. Michael, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, tell me a little bit about these rules. We've heard the two big basic ones about providing water and measuring the heat index. Is this an evolution of some previous rules that were already in place, or is this something just completely new that's been adopted?
Well, it's really a third option. It isn't so much an evolution of existing rules, but it's not new. It's the same guidance that we've been giving for many years now. We have a publication that we put out that basically says that if you are working in the heat, you need shade, you need water, you need rest. And when you look at the requirements of this rule, that's exactly what it focuses on.
And this applies even to indoor workers, doesn't it?
It does. It applies to indoor workers essentially who are affected by the weather. So it doesn't address high heat processes. We have a general provision that will continue to apply in that case. But for folks who can't fully control the outside or the inside temperature because of the outside temperature, this rule applies to them as well.
I see. Tell me a little bit more about some of the other provisions in this. I know the agency is working on a permanent plan. This one's 180 days in length, correct?
Yeah, this rule will be in place for 180 days, or frankly, it'll probably be less than that, because I would anticipate that we'll have our permanent rule that we've been working on for several months in place before that 180 days run. But this builds upon the work that we've had of a rulemaking advisory committee that's been working on this issue since March. We just felt that we couldn't let another season pass before we had at least the basic requirements in place.
How do you monitor the heat index?
Well, the easiest way to monitor the heat index is actually with an app on the telephone. It's a NIOSH OSHA app. It's available on both Android devices and iOS, the Apple format devices. And for the simplest use, you can just enable the location and it will tell you right then what the heat index is for where you are. There's also a calculator available on the NOAA National Weather Service site that provides the same information. And in both cases, you also can check other locations, and you can look forward. Plus, you can plug things in to see what would change with other variables. So one of the things that we ask employers to do if they're looking at indoor environments that are partially controlled is to recalculate the heat index using the indoor temperature. But they can assume that the humidity remains the same.
I see. Tell me about some of the other provisions, how you communicate with the employees, how you're going to, administer just the day-to-day operations of this.
So you covered the requirements that kick in at the basic level when it's 80 degrees Fahrenheit at the heat index or above that level, and that's access to shade, drinking water. Extra drinking water. There's always an expectation that there'd be drinking water. And then some basic training requirements that kick in the 1st of August. But when you get to a point that you're above 90 degrees, you also need to implement high heat practices, primarily focusing on effective communication, either direct observation or back and forth communication, so that other individuals can monitor one another. You know, one way to do this is the buddy system, but that's not the only way to do that. And then making sure that people know what the symptoms are and who they need to call for emergency medical services so that there's no delay if somebody does appear to be affected by heat illness. In addition, those high heat practices involve ensuring that the employees take a minimum of a 10-minute preventative cool-down rest break when they're not working and they're in the shade at least every 2 hours. And obviously, although the rule doesn't require it, we'd hope that employers would increase those breaks and extend them as the heat index gets even higher. And then finally, there is a requirement for an emergency medical plan, which has more of the details about how to respond in the event of an emergency, how to deal with signs and symptoms, and again, as I mentioned previously, making sure that medical care is provided when necessary without delay.
Yeah.
The rule does include a general provision to acclimatize employees if possible, and that's just the idea of easing them into work at higher heats if they aren't accustomed to being outdoors and engaged in vigorous activity in the heat.
Do you have some training programs for employers or employees as well?
We do. We actually have an extensive set of resources that can sort of provide passive training. They're all available on our website, which is OSHA.Oregon.gov. And if you go to that site, there's an A to Z topics link, and you can select heat, and you get all sorts of materials and resources that are available. And all those are available in English, of course, and almost all of them are available in Spanish as well.
We're speaking this morning with Michael Wood, the administrator of Oregon OSHA. If you have a question and would like to join the conversation, the phone number is 800-838-3760, or you can send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org. This is a relatively new thing with these heat waves that we've had in the Northwest. I suppose people who live in other parts of the country may be used to a high heat index and more acclimated to that. What kind of attention would particular employers need to look for if they're not used to this kind of heat wave situation?
Well, the basic thing is to make sure that folks are getting water, that they're having the time for breaks. And when I talk about getting water, the rule requires that there should be enough drinking water available so that each employee can consume 32 ounces per hour. And that seems like an awful lot, but if you're working vigorously in outdoor heat, that really is the recommended amount of water consumption. In addition to that, you want to be aware if people start to show signs of disorientation, if they appear to be, or if they indicate that they're feeling nauseous, and certainly if there's any significant level of confusion, you want to take that very seriously and act quickly. That's why the rule relies on monitoring by other employees or by supervisors or a buddy system, because one of the things that is true about heat illness, as frankly is true about many forms of illness, is that we're terrible at diagnosing it ourselves. And so it's really important to have people watching out for one another on the workplace as you get to those higher heat levels.
Do you have inspectors who will go along and monitor this? I know you've mentioned that a person can report without any fear of retribution, but how are you going to monitor this?
So we have two sets of field staff, and the first group is what we refer to as our enforcement staff or our compliance staff, and they're inspectors who enforce the Oregon OSHA requirements in the workplace. A number of them were out this weekend, and we're going to be continuing to enforce this rule as the other rule, as well as the other rules that we are responsible for. And so they're out there, and they'll do inspections. They do inspections without announcing them in advance. They'll base part of that on what we observe, just seeing folks working out in the heat, especially if it appears that they don't have appropriate protection, but we'll check it out in any case. We also respond to complaints. But it's important to mention that that's not the only group of field staff we have, because we provide consultation services. So if employers don't want to wait for enforcement to show up and deal with us in an inspection context, they actually can reach out and contact us and ask for consultation services. Those services are free. They're confidential. And they'll provide a sense of how to implement the best practices in the workplace, as well as identify any deficiencies in the program without any risk of citation. Our consultants aren't enforcement staff. They can't issue citations, and they don't communicate with the enforcement staff about what they find.
So it's better for the employers to be proactive in this and really get ahead of it.
Absolutely, especially if they're willing to take the advice they get from the consultants seriously.
I was going to ask about, in a press release you folks sent out, you were talking about non-job factors such as medications or obesity, alcohol, a bunch of other things. Do you start to wade into a territory where there's a concern about privacy issues?
We could, except what the rule does is it tries to train, the requirement with regard to those non-job factors is that employees be trained to be aware of them. So it isn't a matter of looking at an employee and saying, you look like you're carrying more weight than you should, and I think perhaps you have diabetes as well. It's a matter of making sure that all the employees are trained so that they recognize that if they're overweight, if they're out of shape, if they're diabetic, if they have other conditions that may aggravate the way that they react to the heat, that they're aware of that and they can self-regulate to a degree.
Are you studying the rules that have already been adapted in some other states? Maybe this is more toward establishing the permanent rule on that, but are you looking at other locations?
We are. We're very aware of the other states that have rules that apply to outdoor heat or to ambient heat. It's actually a short list. California has a rule that they've had in place for quite a while. Washington has a rule, and they actually adopted some additional requirements a couple weeks ago on an emergency basis but they didn't address shade in their rule, and their emergency changes brought in shade. And not only do we stay abreast of those rules, but actually the rulemaking staff on those issues in the three states have been communicating with each other over recent months, and it will definitely inform, it did inform this rulemaking, but it will definitely inform the permanent rulemaking as we go forward.
Have you heard of any pushback yet from some employers?
Well, I think there's a concern from employers. Certainly any time we put something in place without an extensive lead time that they can adjust to it, and that's what happens in the case of temporary rules to address an emergency. And then other than that, primarily the concerns have been more along the lines of exactly what do they need to do. I think most employers, and certainly many of the employers we've been engaged with, recognize that this is a real issue and that it's an increasing issue in the times that we face. So I think their biggest concern is making sure that they know what we expect and they know what they need to do to be in compliance. And frankly, that's the right focus, is to work on complying with the rule, addressing the safety and health hazards, and then they actually should be in pretty good shape going forward.
Once again, this morning, we're speaking with Michael Wood. He is the administrator of Oregon OSHA, and we're talking about the new rules that are being put into place because of the heat waves that we've seen in our region recently. If you have a question, you can call in by phone at 800-838-3760, or you can always send us an email to jx@jeffnet.org. I'm wondering about, every now and then, human beings are stubborn, and let's say you're an employer and you tell your employee, okay, it's time for a break, and you go over and you sit in the shade, and you don't drink the adequate water that you're supposed to. How does an employer deal with an employee who's, for whatever reason, being reticent about complying with that rule?
Well, there are two different approaches depending on the particular requirement. With regard to water, the rule requires the water be made available. It doesn't actually require that the employer monitor the amount that an employee is drinking. Now, if I were an employer and I had an employee working outside the heat who wasn't drinking any water, I suppose I would push a bit on that because that would be a cause for concern. But otherwise, I just rely on them to regulate their water intake and their water level. Once we make sure that it's available and it's readily available and it's not hot so that it's available at a reasonable temperature, people will typically take in water that they need. With regard to taking the breaks in the shade, that's a little bit different issue. When that's triggered, we do expect employers to enforce it, just as they'd enforce any other protective measures, whether it's the use of fall protection in construction or wearing protective gear. And so when it comes to that, it really isn't the employee's choice. It's something they should do, and frankly, they should appreciate. But if they aren't prepared to take their breaks, the employer needs to insist and make sure that they get those 10 minutes every 2 hours in the shade.
If an employer comes to you and says, you know, I really want to comply and help out, but we're talking about some things here, whether it's erecting shade that they don't currently have on their property or whatever, let's assume it's an outdoor situation like that, or talking about, you know, the mechanical type ventilators, fans, I should say, working. Is there any kind of financial help or anything that a loan program, anything an employer can do if they're just really strapped financially and trying to comply?
We don't have any sort of grant or loan program related to compliance with these or other rules. Now, there may be other resources available, and particularly in the context of COVID, we know that there's money out there for, you know, something like ventilation can be described as a control for COVID as well. But no, as a general rule, we provide guidance, we provide help with employers understanding what they need to do, but implementing the safety and health requirements is a cost of doing business.
Let's say that an employer is not being very compliant on this and an employee wants to come forward. You know, I hate to use the word whistleblower. Maybe that's an overstatement. But what is the best way for them to voice their concerns to you?
Well, they can contact us by phone or by email. But the best way to voice their concerns is actually to go on to our website. Again, that's osha.oregon.gov. And they can look at there is right there on our front page, there's a link that says Get Help. And under that, one of the options, it's the same place that Request a Consultation is found, but one of the options is file a complaint. And we have an online form in both English and Spanish. They can provide the information there. We prefer that they provide their identity to us. They can ask that we protect that identity, and we will do that. But we also take anonymous complaints, although sometimes those don't provide enough detail for us to act on. And then we'll evaluate the complaint. We may reach out to the employer if there are issues that we think we can address with them by telephone. If we decide to do an inspection, we'll do that without notice.
If we're out in an extremely rural area and somebody unfortunately has a medical event related to this, despite the best efforts to try to, you know, give them shade and water, are there any new plans going into place for how to deal with an emergency like that?
Well, employers should have a plan to allow medical response and the provision of medical care in any of their work sites. That's actually an existing requirement. The heat rule beefs that up a bit, and they need to know what medical services are available in the location that they're at and how to access those. Now, certainly there's a variation between the level of response that you're going to get in the middle of Medford versus what you're going to get out in the remote hills. But in all cases, the employers need to be prepared to provide basic first aid and ensure that medical responders get the information as quickly as possible and are able to respond to the location.
Yeah, is this rule hard and fast on the 80 degrees heat index? I suppose, and I'm just guessing here, that people who live, speaking of Medford, live in southern Oregon are maybe a little more used to the heat than people who live in Portland. Is it just easier to keep it at a very set temperature?
It is easier to keep it at a set temperature, and when you look at what's required at 80 degrees, that is the training, the water, and the shade. It isn't before we get above the heat index of 90 degrees that you're talking about enforcing the breaks and the more rigorous check-in and interaction procedures. Of course, the requirement about acclimatization certainly would take into account those people who are more readily acclimatized because they already live in that climate. But one of the things that we know is that heat illness doesn't necessarily just occur in those locations where the heat is unusual or unexpected. In other locations where you have continuous high heat, and particularly when you reach a point that you're not getting relief overnight, that can be a significant problem as well. And that's a problem that in the long term is more likely to happen in a place like Medford than it is in Portland.
I know I've seen roofing companies knock off at about noon. They start as early as they can, depending on noise levels. And I'm wondering if some employers may consider that, where they try to do more of some shift work that takes advantage of some cooler temps.
Absolutely. That is, one of the most straightforward ideas. We call it administrative controls, but just shifting the time of your work so that you're not exposed above the hazard level is one great approach. And, certainly when we get into the very high heat events, employers may want to think about having a shorter shift and only getting the critical work done that has to be done over that period. And that heat dome event that we hit a few weeks ago was, particularly for those of us in the Valley, was just incredible when it came to the level of heat. And I think the employers who simply said, because their work allowed them to, they weren't going to work over that three-day period, probably made the best decision. That's not something we require. We can't prohibit work, but it's certainly something that is worth looking at when we get into those exceptional situations.
Michael Wood, we have about 30 seconds left. Can you give us just a quick recap of what people can do to stay safe in the heat?
Well, the important thing is to get access and use access to shade, to rest and take breaks in that shade, and to drink plenty of water.
All right. Michael Wood, the administrator for Oregon OSHA, has been with us this morning. We're talking about the new rules that are being implemented. These are initially temporary rules to help workers who are in high heat situations. And basically, if the heat index is 80 degrees or more, there needs to be breaks. There needs to be water breaks as well. Once again, Michael, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much. We appreciate the attention to an important issue.